Yes, sit back, buckle up, because it's Friday on My Car Guru, and the guru is with us by telephone. Here he is, Lenny Lawson. Good morning, sir.
I drove up to the dealership this morning, and I saw my Mustang Mach-E plugged in to our outside charger. We've got this charging station just sitting out there in the middle of the lot, and all somebody has to do is, if they have electric cars, come in and plug in. I said, when they installed it, I said, how do we turn this thing off? I mean, what is... So am I expected to just give free electricity to anybody that drives by? So, well, you can turn it off at the circuit breaker on the inside. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you're going to see a whole lot more of these around East Tennessee and at car dealerships. They are, as more and more of the electric vehicles come out. I was reading an article last night in a magazine. It says, well, I'm just quoting from the magazine. It says, why are electric vehicles out in the light again? Well, one reason in the new interest in them is simple: air pollution. If there's one clear superiority of an electric motor over an internal combustion engine, it's that the electric doesn't spew pollutants into the air. Mm-hmm. 50 years ago, nobody worried about that, for the atmosphere was regarded as an infinite waste basket. Now, however, some scientists are convinced that the atmosphere is being filled with gaseous waste products. So you would think this would be an article from a recent magazine, but this is from a 1967, January 1967, Road and Track magazine, talking about electric cars coming back. At the time, Ford and GM were the two powerhouses in the domestic market. And they were really working on battery technology and electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. I totally was not aware of this until I just was going through this old magazine collection, Tim, that I bought several years ago, a bunch of Road and Track, Car and Driver magazines, Motor Trend, and so forth. And occasionally I'll just pull one out and take it home and look at it and enjoy it. And this particular one, you know, was talking about electric vehicles, and here we are. You know, they just never really, well, you go back to the turn of the century, not this past century, but the previous one, mm-hmm. and electric vehicles were a big deal. I mean, you could charge a vehicle and charge it over a period of time. I don't know how long it took to charge it, but you could drive for about 50 miles in total silence, and it looked like you were riding on a carriage, no motor, nothing like that. But they just didn't catch on because of the limited range and limited speed. Mm-hmm. Even back in '67, General Motors was testing they actually put an electric motor in a Corvair, Tim, and they called it Electrovair. It's a good name.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It weighed 800 pounds more than a corresponding gasoline Corvair. It had comparable acceleration, but only had a range of 40 to 80 miles. Now, this Mach-E outside has a range of about 300 miles. And again, we've been driving in. I encourage folks to come down. This is a demo model only, and it is available for test drives. A customer came in to get the oil change yesterday. I know him pretty well. And I said, how would you like to drive an electric car? She said, do you think I can? I said, yes, you can. And so she jumped in, and I showed her how to turn it on. She said, well, is it going to be different? And I said, well, not really. I mean, you put it in drive and put your foot on the accelerator pedal, and when you want to stop, you hit the brakes. When you want to turn it off, you push this button. Put it back in park and push this button. It turns off, you know, just like a regular car. And so she came back yesterday afternoon, and she said, that was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that I could actually drive, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and enjoy. How much does it cost? I said, well, it's $55,000. Ooh. You know, so, but this was a pretty loaded up Mach-E that we have. It's all-wheel drive. It has leather. And it's, you know, it's pretty well equipped. So, but then you get your $7,500 tax credit and life is good, right? Thank you, Uncle Sam, for providing that little tax credit for us. Mm-hmm. Okay, looking at the news today, it was kind of interesting. Pete Buttigieg, you remember him?
I remember who you're talking about. Pete Buttigieg, they call him, I think, on some shows around here.
Yeah, Buttigieg. Anyway, he is the transportation secretary, and he was really caught unaware of any support by the Biden administration to ban gasoline-powered vehicles after 2035. California aims to do that. Tim, I wouldn't recommend moving to California.
You wouldn't?
Unless you don't want to buy a new car without a gas engine. California aims to ban all gasoline-powered engines as far as new vehicle sales by 2035. I don't know what they're going to do about people that already have one.
Yeah, really. Makes you wonder what they're going to do.
I would say that gasoline will get so expensive in California that they will do their best to force. It's already more expensive there than any place else.
Yeah.
So they will do what they can to force people through the cost of gasoline. I think that's going to be the, you know, as long as there is a Democrat in the White House and control of Congress and so forth, you will see this continual move towards more environmental action, which includes electric vehicles. As if a Republican or conservative gets into the White House, you will see a lot of the regulations be pulled back. It's just this tug of war that goes on. I wish they could all just get together and come up with some type of a unified strategy that doesn't change every 4 to 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you could count on, so that we could just get on with it. You know what I'm saying, Tim?
I do, and you know, I think that's a good term, what you said, tug of war, because no matter what your political affiliation, it's just realistic to see that it is a tug of war going on, and that kind of politics going on.
You know, businesses try to plan for the future, and when you have the rules constantly changing, the regulations being modified and put in place, then rescinded, and back and forth, it just really makes it difficult. And, you know, if they just have a clear path, then, you know, let's just get on the path. Let's just let the electrical vehicles, if people want to buy them, then trust me, the manufacturers will build them. What I think a lot of people in this country, they want to force this issue, and they want to say, well, people shouldn't be able to buy what they want because they're not smart enough to know that it can, you know, damage the planet and so forth. And, you know, maybe, I don't know whether that's true or not. You know, everybody has different opinions both ways. But we do need some type of a plan. I have no problem driving an electric vehicle. I mean, I've been driving this one around enough to realize that, okay, this can work. You know, as long as the charging infrastructure is there for travel and they can continue to improve driving range, you know, I see no problem with electric vehicles. I just worry what happens when the electric grid goes down for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you've got a situation where you have devastating tornadoes or floods or whatever, no electricity, then, you know, you can't go out and jump in your gas-powered vehicle or your electric vehicle because it has no juice.
Well, it happened happened to us this morning, Lenny. Our power went out at 11:30 last night and didn't come back till after 7 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, so what if you come home from work and your battery is dead, or close to dead, and you pull into your garage and you plug it in, and then the power goes out? Well, you can't get to work the next morning.
Exactly.
That's no good.
Yeah.
So anyway, wiser minds, well, I guess we'll figure this out, or won't, depending on the case. I know people got sick of me talking about the Takata airbag recalls. You know, I got a few calls saying, hey, Lenny, we get it about the Takata airbags. Now I'm stuck on computer chips, but the news just keeps coming out about the lack of a supply of computer chips and how that's going to impact the auto industry. And, you know, I've got several articles that I've read last night and this morning about how this is not going to resolve quickly. And so the impact on the consumer is kind of interesting in that the typical – what I learned in economics my first quarter at UT was the law of supply and demand. And when supply is down, you know, there's more demand for fewer products. And what is the impact that has on pricing? And we all know that it drives prices up. And so what folks are telling me as they shop around – in our market is that they're finding dealers holding firm on pricing, you know, real close to MSRP right now. But to offset that in a good way, or because of there's such a small demand or a small supply of new cars, used cars are becoming very scarce as well. And so values of used cars are skyrocketing right now. So, that, you know, they kind of offset one another. Thank goodness we still have low interest rates for financing. I don't know how long that's going to last.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what the Fed does, but right now, rates are low and the market is good. It's just that don't be surprised if you drive into a Chevy store or a Ford dealership or Honda dealership and they don't have what you want. You know, you're wanting to buy a Honda Accord with a sunroof, and they don't have any with sunroofs, and they can't get you one in any reasonable time frame. You know, people are coming in to order vehicles, and they said, how long is it going to take to get it? Normally it takes 6 to 8 weeks, Tim, mm-hmm. You know, from the time you order a new Ford to the time you get it. Right now we have no potential delivery time that we can give somebody. The Ford truck plant in Dearborn, Michigan is closed until Saturday, and they're going to try to reopen on Saturday. So that's where we are with the auto industry. Let's take our first break. I want to come back and talk about a letter that I wrote to the Motor Vehicle Commissioner for the state of Tennessee about advertising, and we'll be back in just a minute.
And back here on a Friday edition of My Car Guru, and when you mentioned the letter, that song, The Letter by the Box Tops, you remember that? That went running through my head.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
My baby.
You know, I was, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just singing a little bit.
Oh, were you? Go ahead. Yeah. If you want to sing for a little bit.
She wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live. Remember that song? Yeah, you remember it.
Without no more. Yeah, go. I remember that song.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, I just played a 1 minute radio commercial, right?
Yes.
And you hope that there is content in that commercial that hits somebody's ears that's in the market for a car, and then they will respond by either going online to GatewayDeal.com, or they will drive to my dealership and shop for a vehicle and give us the opportunity to earn their business, right?
Right.
Isn't that the purpose of advertising?
Pretty much. It's to get people to act and maybe frequent you and buy your product.
Now, the question is, was there anything in that commercial that was deceptive? Was there anything in that commercial that was illegal? I can answer that question, no.
Mm-hmm.
Deceptive, no. Subject to interpretation, possibly. I have a mission, and that's to clean up advertising in the auto industry in Tennessee. I'm working with the Motor Vehicle Commission. I'm working with Tennessee Automobile Dealers Association. Nobody is talking about this, and it's a big problem. And I'll talk about four areas that the biggest problems exist. And when I say a problem, it's anti-competitive between dealers, and it's also anti-consumer, because there's a lot of deception and promises and half-truths and, just the shell games that are being played with advertising. And it's unfortunate. Some dealers laugh at it, and they say, well, Lenny, you're just really kind of going over the top here. You're out in the weeds on this. But I'm going to tell you what I believe, and I'm going to tell you why I believe that it needs to happen. There are four areas: pricing and payments, trade values, unsubstantiated claims, and then credit advertising. Now, when it comes to pricing and payments, dealers should only be able to offer discounts off of MSRP on new cars. It's really the only true leverage a dealer has to lower the price to a consumer is to reduce the selling price of a car with a discount. Now, if one dealer is pricing his vehicles over MSRP, let's say you've got dealer A that says that we will knock off $2,000 off of a car, but he's, instead of basing that off MSRP, which is the level playing field that everybody starts from, he's got all of his prices marked up $1,000 over MSRP. So if he's offering a $2,000 discount, he's really only offering $1,000 off of MSRP. But, you know, people listen to that and they think, wow, this dealer down the road is offering much bigger discounts when, in fact, he has just inflated his prices and then is knocking more off. Deceptive, right? Right now, illegal? No, it's not illegal. Is it unethical? I certainly think it is. I don't think dealers should be able to disguise discounts in any other form. For example, you'll see a lot of ads say, we will match the factory rebate, or we will double the factory, we will double the factory rebate. Well, they can't do that without discounting the car. Mm-hmm. They're not going to write you a check, give you money. They're just discounting the car. It's a deceptive way of saying we're going to discount our car. You see dealers that advertise, we will match your tax refund or your stimulus check. Those kind of things, again, the only thing that they're doing is discounting the car. It's not like they're giving you extra cash. Tim, don't you think that the average consumer, let me ask you, what do you typically think? If somebody says, okay, you're going to get a $1,500 tax refund and we're going to match that, you know, how do you think the average consumer perceives that in terms of what that extra $1,500 is going to mean to them?
Well, you would expect that extra $1,500 to be taken off the price. You know,
okay.
The suggested price.
MSRP, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, would you assume also, well, they're going to give you this extra cash, okay? That would you assume also that when you go in, you might be able to get a discount on the price of the car?
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
You're assuming that the customer is going to say, you know, this extra $1,500 is just going to be an additional discount. But a lot of people come in may think that, well, no, that's just extra money that they're going to give me, and then I can get a discount on the car as well. You know, it's also when payments are quoted. Some dealers are quoting like $99 a month on new cars when it's just not possible without a massive down payment and greatly extended terms or leases, which are not disclosed. I've used payment advertising in my my advertising career. I use it all the time. But I don't think dealers should. I think it would be a lot better if payment advertising was banned so that – because there's too many variables, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if – I mean, yeah, you can get a $99 a month on an F-150 if you pay $42,000 down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
It's not a relevant number, but it really drives the traffic. You know, when you're advertising $179 a month for a Nissan Altima, people say, "Wow, that's a low cost. That's a low payment."
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you know, if they're gonna allow that type of advertising, the disclaimer in the ad has to be prevalent. You know, like. You see these TV commercials and you hear these radio commercials and you hear all that, you know, at the end of the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to be able to understand that they're saying, well, this, in order to get this payment, you know, you've got to pay $5,000 down or 20% down or whatever. And it doesn't include tax and so forth. It's just they can simplify it by just banning it altogether or requiring a very slow, deliberate explanation. You know, for example, $179 a month with 20% down over 84 months at 1.9% APR. Now, if you explain that to somebody, and based on this selling price, if you lay all that out, then the consumer can make a legitimate decision. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely, because those disclaimers, you mentioned it, you just can't understand what they're saying. They go so fast. The only way you could decipher that is to record it and then have some kind of slowdown mechanism capability to where you can slow it down and separate the words more, you know?
Yeah, now on TV advertising, it's the same thing. All they're required to do is somewhere in the 30-second ad or the one-minute ad is to have a disclaimer on the screen, and it can be so small that you can't read it,
yep.
But it has to be on the screen. To me, that's unfair to the consumer.
Oh, yeah.
Another area is trade values. You know, one of the biggest and most abused hooks used by dealers today involves guaranteed trade value or overbooked trade values.
Mm-hmm.
These should be banned by the commission altogether. The reason is that there's just far too many loopholes. There's too many different books. There's too many different classifications within the books. Now, I recently used this type of offer. I was offering 125% of book value, but my offer was different because I will pay that for your car whether you trade or not. Now, that's a legitimate offer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're offering 125% of book value, what book, what against what, you know, against what MSRP, or are you going off of some inflated window sticker? And to keep moving, unsubstantiated claims, you know, like we'll beat any deal. Nobody works harder to earn your business. We are number one. You know, all these claims, they sound really good and they make your advertising sound good, but they're just, but you can't enforce it and you can't justify it. Credit advertising is the final area. It's a massive problem. Telling people that they can buy regardless of their credit, that it won't affect their payment, stuff like that, that's just a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this and hear it in dealer advertising, and it just makes me cringe. And I just think it's important that this is brought to the forefront. TAA and the Motor Vehicle Commission has responded. They issued a letter to all dealers in the state because of my prompting. And as of April 15th, they are going to start enforcing the laws that they have on the books now, which they haven't been doing for many, many years, too many years, and it's like the wild, wild west out there right now. I'm not meaning to sound negative, although I am being negative, and I understand that, but it's so important that it needs to be fixed so that consumers and dealers can compete, or dealers can compete on a level playing field, and consumers can trust what they're reading and hearing when it comes to advertising. It's an important thing, and I'm pushing hard, Tim.
Well, very good. Good for you. All right, let's take our last break. We'll come back and wrap things up. Back here to wrap up My Car Guru and heading into the last weekend of the month here, Lenny. It's a big time at Gateway.
It is a big time, and our grand opening month has gone grand. It's just been fantastic. We're going to extend it through next month. We've got most of our additional Nissan product is going to be coming over the next few weeks, so we're excited about that and looking forward to seeing a lot of folks that listen to the radio show. So come on down and check us out online at gatewaydeal.com.
All right. Sounds good. Hope you have a great weekend, and everybody out there, too. And we'll talk to you Monday, Lenny.